If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
I respect you and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, JF.
Hello, everyone. Hello, everyone. End of the line, Joel says, this is not AI. I remember these episodes exactly. Yes, I made a new intro mixing some elements of reality and some elements of AI. I hope you guys enjoy. Because the old music I was using for the intro, there's a group, I think a Brazilian orchestra that says, we originally made this music, which then some guy published an edited form of that music. So they claim the copyright kind of as a secondary maker of that music decades ago. And they claim that this guy copied them. So I had no choice but to abolish it from my videos so that I can keep my videos monetized. And I had no choice but to create a new intro music. This one I created it myself from Suno Music. So we shouldn't have any copyright issues with it. Tonight is very important. It's not just because we have a new intro. Tonight is very important because I will absolutely lay total destruction on this whole line of argument that Ian Carroll has been making for a long time, that a 30-06 cannot do this, cannot do that, that the injuries of Charlie Kirk are incompatible with a 30-06, with the idea that it would have been fired by Tyler Robinson. I will absolutely destroy this. And I am sympathetic to Ian Carroll, Candace Owens. I hope that they continue asking questions. But tonight, Ian, I'm showing you all the facts. You've demanded all of the facts this morning to Nick Fuentes. Nick Fuentes is a busy man. I'm doing it instead of Nick, but I hope that you review all this. I have a physical theory. I have video evidence straight from the assassination. We will be reviewing this. I have a complete history of what happened to this bullet, and I believe I can show that it's not only a coherent story, the idea that Tyler Robinson shot a 30-06 in the neck of Charlie Kirk, that it's actually the most likely hypothesis given the evidence. And in fact, it's solidly backed by both models of ballistics, sources, my own knowledge of surgery, hunting, skin, because I am publishing tonight an absolutely new theory about the trajectory of the bullet in the neck of Charlie Kirk. I have noticed something on a video that to me is a tell. The bullet did not get stopped by bones. The bullet did not get stopped by bones. The bullet had a wobbling trajectory due to the inclination of the shooting, which was reproduced in test, which reduced its energy, which reduced its angle of penetration, which increased the internal tumble after the point of entry in the neck of Charlie Kirk. And then what it did, tumbling, not being able, therefore, because arriving at an angle in the back of the neck of Charlie Kirk, smashed into the skin, the internal part of the skin of Charlie Kirk, and then was driven downward by the skin elasticity back toward his neck. This is what happened. I am sure of it. And I believe that Ian Carroll is a decent man and a man of evidence. I believe I will give you, Jan, an opportunity tonight to review my video when I'm done with all of my arguments. All of my sources will be published in the description below. I believe you cannot look at this and conclude it's impossible. I believe you have to at least, if you're not as convinced as me, I believe that you will have to at least acknowledge that it's a very plausible trajectory for the bullet. And I believe we have video evidence showing where that bullet went. Now, before we do this, because there's so much stuff happening, I will do a review, by the way, of all of the statements of Jan Carroll this morning. And I will make a defense of just the mainstream narrative. Not because I particularly like the mainstream narrative, but because I think that in this case, the mainstream narrative, even if there may be errors, even if there may be incompleteness in it, I believe that it is roughly correct. And this is the case I'm going to do tonight. However, some announcements and the big events of today. First, Nick Fuentes is going to be on this show. Okay, I'm so excited. I can't even count the years. It must have been 6 years maybe that we haven't done a show together. We used to do a couple of shows together. Nick Fuentes will be coming. I'm not giving you the date and time. Nick is a very busy man, so I'm not trying to push him to schedule. I said just choose your time and date. And he will get back to me. We will have something like a Christmas special, probably before Christmas or around Christmas. We will be speaking to Nick Fuentes. And I believe we have to talk about the... So the reason I want this interview to happen is that these schisms that are arising, they are deeper than people would think or say. When Candace Owens is out there doing basically what is a public epistemological investigation, there is good in there. And I'm willing to defend the idea that even if Candace is wrong, even she's been demonstrably wrong on some stuff, even if Candace is wrong, I'm willing to defend the idea that some of her work is actually pushing a new form of epistemology, one in which we ask questions publicly. And I believe it does connect to an old form of journalism, this kind of James O'Keefe type on the field, pushing, asking questions, even if you don't know the answer. Should we discuss questions publicly? And I believe that Nick Fuentes' position on this is absolutely rational. What Nick Fuentes has a credibility to defend. Of course, if Nick Fuentes starts reporting stuff that is false, it's going to be held against him forever. And so Nick Fuentes is more cautious on these things. So when Candace is implying all these things about Israel, when Nick Fuentes refuses to get in this stuff, there is a conflict of interest here, but the two sides are right. And I want to capture this in my exclusive interview with Nick Fuentes. It's going to happen within the next 20 days, I would think so. But I'm also not pressuring Nick because he's been doing such great interviews, like Piers Morgan today. I know that I'm a secondary channel and I'm willing to take him when he's going to be ready. Piers Morgan today. Look, this was an amazing appearance, hilarious, trollish at time. It was really an interview in which I was at the edge of my seat throughout. Like, it's very hard for an intellectual interview to be exciting by that to that extent. But it was interesting. I will not do a full commentary tonight because it's not the subject of our stream. But wow, what a performance by Nick Fuentes. Piers Morgan tried to do the classic kind of clip farming call out. Nick Fuentes was solid throughout, basically presenting himself as an iconoclast, tired of the moralism around questions of Holocaust or whatever, tired of the emotional blackmailing, and willing even to engage in some degree of trolling when he said when he pushed to the idea that I think it could be 100 times more. I think it could be 100 times more victims. We keep finding new ones. And what did Piers Morgan have? Well, he had kind of an appeal to decency, an appeal to, oh, well, this is racism, this is misogyny. But throughout, Nick has maintained both a connection with the audience in trolling about it and being careless. I find at times I was scared for Nick because I was like, maybe he's going a little too flippant. I was like, oh, well, I don't know how this passes with the normies. I don't know if this fits. But then I found myself correcting myself and I actually rewatched the whole interview and I realized, no, there was just a fine equilibrium of flippant trollishness, edginess. And basically, Nick made a good case throughout that we're done responding to moral blackmail. We're done responding to emotional extortion of that sort. And it pieces, hit jobs, and you said this. We don't care. We're going to repeat it. At many times in this interview, Nick Fuentes just watched his old clip and said, that was true. That was absolutely true. I don't apologize for this. And that is an important message to throw to the next generation. Look, you can place yourself in a position of liberty where we won't care anymore. And hopefully one day no one has to care. Hopefully one day everyone has the same freedom of speech that Nick demonstrated in that interview. Then there was some play around trying to attack the family of Nick. Nick did well here calling out, hey, you know, you're attacking people who are not here to defend themselves. Why don't you focus on me? And then it moved on to race statistics and stuff of that sort. And Nick Fuentes was very powerful in this and very correct. I have reviewed factually and scientifically the debate. Piers Morgan makes two false claims. I have debunked those false claims. The idea, he was trying to trap Nick into an absolute number fallacy where it's like, oh, well, most of the mass shootings are, or most of the school shootings are made by whites. And it's like, well, per capita first. And secondly, why would you create this artificial category of school shootings? Because there are people who don't go to school very often, okay? Rates of absenteeism in certain communities of the U.S. is like 50%. So if they're going to do a shooting, it's going to be a street shooting. It's not going to be a school shooting. Even when they're not shooting, they're not going to the school at 50%. So Nick actually managed this expertly, said, hey, look, I remember personally my data is this. And I've backed up that, yes, it is true that about 4.5%, Nick said 1 out of 20 black male will find themselves in a committing a murder. That is just the number. And and Piers Morgan was trying to make the case that it's about 1%. Piers Morgan was working from invalid statistics. Because when you make these calculations, you have to include unsolved murders. And you have to make an assumption that unsolved murders, probably roughly, they are the same as solved murders. They are as likely to be committed as proportionally as blacks or whites. You have to make some assumption about unsolved murders if you're going to calculate the rate by single individual that will commit a murder. Because if you just take the resolved cases, then you're underestimating the rate of murder by a factor of 2 to a little more than 2, which is exactly what Piers Morgan has been doing. So saying, I have my fact checkers, they're telling me this. Well, you don't know what you're talking about, Piers. because you're just repeating what your little intern boys are telling you, and they don't know. They computed this data roughly. They made estimates. They forgot something very important, which is if you're going to judge people individually, you need to include the unsolved murders as a mass of, even if you were to just multiply your solved murders by proportion, you have to do it, or else you're underestimating by 2 to 3x the number of murders per person. So all of this is debunked in my tweet about it. All right, so we are now entering the main portion of the show where I will absolutely abolish, destroy, and put to the ground this idea that the injuries of Charlie Kirk are incompatible with a 30-06. This has been pushed for a long time by Ian Carroll, and there is a wider network of people on the internet who have been pushing the idea that it cannot be. 30-06 is too powerful, they say. 30-06 should blow up the neck of Charlie. 30-06 cannot be stopped by bones. Here are some pork bones. They go through it. Here's some other meat. They go through it. Here's some concrete. They go through it. Tonight, I will put this idea to the rest, and I will use video evidence from the very assassination of Charlie Kirk. I will also use reports from hunters, and we will see that what has happened to Charlie Kirk is due to ballistic physics, is due to the nature of the 30-06, and is repeatedly observed in hunting. Repeatedly observed. I will show you Reddit post about it from hunters years ago that didn't know Charlie Kirk was going to get shot. I will also show you videos, because these ballistic gel videos, they're deceptive. They are set up in a way that have deceived Ian Carroll. And I hope tonight that Ian Carroll will watch this entire video. I will tweet it at him tonight after the show. And I hope, Ian, that you can just accept that this is extremely plausible. If not at this point, very likely the most acceptable hypothesis, and that the authorities are not to be questioned in this particular aspect of the case. Now, I'm with Ian on many things. The circumstantial evidence around this case is very importantly pointing toward moneyed interest, and in particular Israel, and I would like to see proper investigation of this. The circumstantial evidence. But that is one thing. It's not enough to conclude stuff. So I believe that Nick Fuentes, from a reporting perspective and from a perspective of accepting and publishing the truth, this as being the truth, I believe that Nick Fuentes is correct to say there's no evidence that it's Israel that killed Charlie Kirk. Now, I also agree with Ian Carroll, Candace Owen, who say, hey, there's all these unanswered questions and circumstantial evidence that are extremely weird. But you shouldn't be stacking elements of the wound question and the gun question into that jar. That jar is an important jar, and I hope that we push our politicians and Cash Patel or whoever can do something about it. I hope that they investigate all traces of money. I've been saying in the past, very important that we determine why Lance Twiggs burned this message under the keyboard. What was under that message? Did Lance Twiggs take a picture of the part that he wanted of the message, but left out another part with Bitcoin payments? Because it would all make sense if Tyler Robinson committed this murder, sponsored by some entity, for the purpose of getting enough money to pay for Lance Twiggs' sex change surgery. Because I've analyzed the psychology of these two, and Tyler Robinson was a romantic, knightly person in his own mind thinking that he was doing all of this for Lance Twiggs. Now, you can interpret that he was doing it for political respect, but Tyler Robinson strikes me as a very pragmatic individual. Yeah, and Single Mom says, Candace keeps saying the French did it. What if she implicates JF? Yes. Well, I want to reassure Candace. My last link with France, the country of France, was Jean Gariepy, who moved to Quebec, who moved to North America in the 18th century, I believe. Maybe even 17th, I'm not sure. And so, no, I am not part of the French government. And I am a man. I am not a woman, Candace. All right, so let's get started on the technicals, because it's going to get technical. So we're going to talk about ballistics. We're going to see what hunters say. We're going to check videos of penetration of 30-06. It's going to get exciting. Welcome, everyone. Let's hear Ian Carroll's argument first.
I didn't get the vibe, but I'm no expert, so we're going to consult some experts. But once...
So this appeal to authority that you do, Ian, is very weak. I'm just going to listen to a bunch of experts. Well, you're cherry-picking, because I'm gonna show you...
Greetings, JF. For our upcoming discussion and Q&A session on X, I not only green light, but expect edgy insights. Exhort the esteemed listeners of the essential nature of insemination, only with the folk, of course. Bryce, at WesternCon UTD, flexed bicep.
Thank you so much, WesternKind. I will be with you on Saturday on your show. And thank you to Friend of Gandalf for the very generous super chat during the night. So appeal to authority is not a valid approach. You will pick up experts. And these experts, by the way, they're not incentivized at finding the truth. They're incentivized at making these spectacular videos. We'll see that there was a guy who actually made a video with very few views, 300 views, who actually figured out what actually happened. And this guy has just low number of views. And of course, the guy that finds the head exploding from the 30-06, he has millions of views. So you have to be careful in your method of fact-finding that you're not integrating elements of spectacularness, bad incentives, moneyed incentives. You cannot find the truth if you're accepting at face value things that self-claimed experts say, but they say it in a context where they are poorly monetarily incentivized.
The FBI told us what rifle was used, told us where the shot was taken from. Shit gets downright
important. And I will say it right now. The elevation of the shot was an important factor. The elevation of the shot in ballistics indicates that the yaw of the bullet. So the bullet is roughly designed to follow gravity. So when the industries are developing bullets, they are making them so that it's going to be roughly downward like this. And it's not going to advance exactly straight. It's just going to advance a little downward to follow the trajectory that is imposed by the gravity. When you shoot at an angle, when your starting shoot angle is like this, you are starting even lower. And on top of it, the design of the bullet pushes the yaw even, the pitch and the yaw even more down. And in fact, even more right, because we say that rifles, the way we design a rifle, we call it right-handed. That is, we create a wobble, we create a rotation, just like a football. We create a rightward rotation into the bullet. Now, the yaw and the pitch will therefore be adjusted more down, more right, so that the penetration angle of the bullet will be more angled as it arrives. And as I will show, this leads to an internal tumbling of the bullet. It increases the internal tumbling. So once once the bullet has successfully pierced skin, but it entered at an angle, what happens to the bullet in the body? It starts doing this. It tumbles. And it creates what we call a temporary cavity, which I will show you. So elevation causes yaw and pitch dysregulation. Yaw and pitch dysregulation, as it enters into the skin, can pierce once, but very often will fail to pierce the back of the skin because the skin is the toughest thing to pierce. Bones, they kind of explode because they're solid. Soft tissue, they kind of get messed up and penetrated by the temporary cavity and expanding, and so soft that it expands and contracts. But the skin is the one thing that stretches and it can push back. And you need a piercing angle to pass skin. And very often that piercing angle cannot be achieved if you have internal tumbling of the bullet. Those are the basics of what I will lay out later.
Possible. And so let's look at a little bit of evidence. And once again, I'm no expert. I am no
Well, Jan, I am an expert in skin because I'm a surgeon. You can check out my past. I have many successful brain surgery on animals, especially monkeys. At Duke University. I'm a postdoc in biology, and I also have slaughtered animals. My father once hunted a moose. So I know skin, and I know why we have to use scalpels on skin. I will note that of all the tissues in the body, in the human body or animal body in general, skin is the only one that you need to slice before you go through. I can penetrate with proper forceps, and that is the proper way to do surgery once you have pierced the skin. Once you have scalpeled the skin, you stretch. You put forceps, you extend. You put forceps in, you extend. Why? Because scalpel, the problem is they open up a whole line of blood vessels that are now bleeding. So you are damaging the blood system when you use a scalpel. When you are internal, beyond the skin, everything is soft enough to just be stretched, and this leads to less internal damage when you do your surgery. I'm saying this because the skin, you cannot plant a forceps in the skin and tear it open. It's going to lead to more disorganized damage than a scalpel would. That's a unique property of the skin.
Combat veteran, I'm no marksman, I don't own rifles, so we're going to defer to the experts, which, Nick, I'm sure you're not one of. This is from the channel One Shot TV.
We got six ball round blew through 20 pounds of meat and two beef femur bones. So those are not easy to stop. I'm hoping this one will give us a slightly different result. And I'm going to aim towards the front left of our ballistic dummy neck, 45 degree angle, and we are shooting slightly downward as well. So I also have to hit the vertebrae because that's allegedly what redirected this bullet.
I can see the neck fall out onto the ground from here.
No elevation, low distance, no tumbling, no effect on yaw of distance.
Well, we definitely penetrated our water jugs, and I don't think this is going to help to stop the conspiracy theories. His head fell off.
So we keep seeing these videos where there's a blowing up of the neck. I will show you other videos because this is called cherry picking. I have no doubt that a .30-06 can blow up a neck like this. Can even just, I mean, in principle, well shot and lucky enough and at the right timing and place, I think it could literally rip your head off. But I will show you that 30-06 does not do this all the time. Absolutely not.
I want to remind us all that At the actual scene of the actual crime, there was no exit wound. There was no blood splattered across the white backdrop.
And I will explain why.
Nothing. The bullet apparently was lodged inside of him. And we'll talk about the autopsy in a little bit. Did you see the spine?
And Zerovro says, ballistic gel doesn't account for skin, which is usually tougher. Some dummies have gel and artificial skin to account for it. Exactly.
And fly out the back of his neck. But I want to go to his actual channel.
Hey, welcome back. Thank you for watching.
And watch a couple sections of his actual video, because there's a lot more that he does in that than just that clip.
Set this one up. I have our ballistic dummy bust on a table.
Brain Hornady. Steve, whatever you want to say, but
maybe around the world, kind of at all times, but you still would need to get them into position. And if the...
So here he's talking about patsies. This is irrelevant to the bullet trajectory.
Doesn't surprise me.
That's the bone was going through there.
Guys?
It's almost 2 inch thick.
So he's reviewing videos of complete destruction of bones, ribs.
We can't everything does it. So,
of course, the defect of this video is the same as the other. No effect of distance, no effect of elevation. 30-06 clean shot from a short distance.
At about a 10 degree angle.
So you see why, as soon as this event occurred, all the military men, all the hunters, like half of America immediately had some serious questions about what we were being told.
We should have serious questions. The question of the bullet trajectory is not serious, as I will show.
He meticulously angles out and shows why this is probably a relatively accurate representation of where the shot would have hit the neck.
I think that this is roughly accurate in terms of the entry. Now, here's my claim. The skin here, given that the bullet was tumbling, the bullet was unable to pierce the skin. And I will show you this through video. I swear to you, by the end of this show tonight, I will show you the skin of Charlie Kirk creating a V-shaped reaction to the bullet. Okay? This is absolutely new. I'm the first to claim this. I've seen it on a single frame of the video. I'm telling you, the bullet tumbled, bumped in the back of Charlie Kirk's neck, on the skin, not on the vertebrae. It bumped exactly right here. So this guy is correct with his line. But what these guys have to understand, Jan Carroll included, is that the skin then pushed the bullet back into Charlie Kirk. And you'll see it on video, I'm guaranteeing you, tonight.
There's actually not a lot of indication that it should have hit the bone in the first place. It very well...
Oh, yeah, and Single Mom says it came to JF in a dream. Yes, this also. I was also... Charlie Kirk came to me in a dream and told me this.
Well, should have gone straight through his neck muscles and tissues and not even hit the vertebrae.
What he doesn't take into account is the bullet in the angle so that it can pierce the skin. If the bullet is tumbling internally, if it approaches the skin like this, it won't pierce the skin. That is precisely why bullets are made sharp and, you know, there's all sorts of hollow point and various shapes of the tip. But if you're not touching the skin with that tip, you're basically bumping into the skin with solid metal, which gets pushed back by the skin.
Making this an even more problematic question. But just for good measure, people are testing the bone part out too, because that's the only way you could ever possibly imagine that there was no exit wound. And
no, my theory is that the skin played the role here, and I will prove that to you tonight.
Because all the TPUSA leakers have told us that the autopsy says that it hit the vertebrae and then traveled down his spine and obliterated him.
Muscle structure that you would find in a human neck. This is where the bullet would have gone.
St. Phineas says, I don't know what I'm talking about. Wait for the rest of my argument, sir. And if you're not convinced at the end of this show that it could have happened, I don't know. I will say sorry.
For it to go into the body, we have to believe it would have done two things. It would have had to take a hard turn in towards the center of the body and then been impressed by or stopped by these bones here enough to get the...
No, it was stopped by the skin and bounced toward the bones. Now, as it was bounced by the skin, through back through the elasticity of the skin, then it didn't have its kinetic energy anymore in full, because the skin absorbs a lot of kinetic energy, throws back just a little bit. And that just a little bit was enough to just push back the bullet to go along the spine, but not too deep.
Reflected down into the body, and we're going to show that that's just not a realistic possibility here.
I would encourage you to go and watch Chris Martin's full video if you want to really get the context here, because he explains the setup of everything. He shows all sorts. He's very, very thorough, and I would encourage you to support his work and to watch the whole video. But we're just going to montage a whole bunch of shots now.
So now we want to dial it up a little bit, and we have these roasts.
So they show that, of course, the bullet can pierce through a layer of pork skin, a bone, and then concrete. Absolutely, it can, with a straight shot, with no internal tumbling.
Kind of hard to get an amount of force.
And then he shows another video with a mannequin being hit. Complete destruction of a bone.
Still haven't seen.
Because.
And then he looks at the argument of this, claiming he's an expert, debunking the whole Charlie Kirk was made of steel. I don't claim that Charlie Kirk was made of steel. I claim that he was made of skin. And I will show you that hunters know very well that skin is capable of withholding a 30-06.
Yes, this is... I want to address some of the discussion of those standing behind him around. This isn't that big of a deal. So could be.
I'm mostly trying to concentrate on the statements of Jan. So I know what this video says, but I need to check what Jan is saying.
Autopsy report.
I confirm.
So both Brandon Tatum and Stephen Gardner are very closely affiliated with Teep USA. And you could say they're Teep USA mouthpieces in this regard, because they are the ones being given the information to release to the public. And this was released after we had a lot of time for the internet to speculate about how weird the shot was and how none of it made sense. And so the release of this information through these channels was even more suspicious at the time. But I'm sure you were watching, Nick, so I'm sure you know all about that.
Another thing that I want to debunk is where he says, if the bullet came to hit these high vertebrae, it would have hit the mouth and the jaw. That is absolutely ridiculous. It is very clear from the video of the assassination. Charlie Kirk is not hit at the C2 level. This image is a fucking joke. Charlie Kirk is hit at the C7 level, even to arguably post C7 toward T1. Very clearly. So absolute bullshit. At worst, you may argue he had a short neck, so he may have been hit at C6, but he's definitely not being hit at C2. C1 or C3. Absolute bullshit argument by Ian.
Problem, this isn't that hard to figure out. We know that, according to the medical examiner report, this 30-06 round came in, hit him in the C2, traveled down. All right, you guys are going to...
Now, the medical report, we have yet to see it. But there could be damage that wobbled to C2. But very clearly, Charlie Kirk is hit at the base of his neck. That's where the entry point is.
Notice some huge problems with this right away, but let's go ahead and, you know, just look at this objectively. All right, we got a protractor out. Let's put that right here on the C2. Okay. We do know, again, from where Tyler Robinson was shooting, it was a 9-degree slope with a 9-degree offset, essentially meaning almost directly on at a 9-degree slope, which we can travel out from our protractor from the C2 here.
No, bullshit, because first, we don't have the report. Maybe the report states that it's damage up to C2. I would absolutely believe this. But that the entry point was at C2, absolutely not. we can actually assess this from just the video.
Exit wound does.
So that's enough of experts talking about bullets. I'm sure we beat that horse to death.
All right, and now we will rebeat it into living, because I will present my theory of what has been happening to Charlie Kirk's neck and this bullet. First, a lot of the evidence that Ian Carroll decided to illustrate here is cherry-picked. Look at this guy. Video 1 month ago, he's only had 3,000 views. Okay? This guy actually attempted an elevated shooting point onto a ballistic gel with 30-06.
Sup, ladies? Welcome back to Tier 9 Operator.
Now, this guy has not had attention brought to him by Ian Carroll. This guy was not talked about by all of the conspiracy theorists. This guy actually reproduced what's the closest to the situation of Charlie Kirk, an elevated shooting position.
TV. Out here in the wild operating. Today's topic of discussion is going to be the 30-06, a popular...
So he's shooting a 30-06, which we are told is impossible. He says it's an elevated position. And let's see. It's an elevated position because the field, see, goes down and he's on top of a hill. And he's going to try to shoot the head ballistic gel.
Where we want to be. All right, pretty repeatable. I think we're pretty close to our last impact, so I think it's time to get Fred out there and check the results. We've got Fred set up. We've got him unwrapped. Seems to be a pretty stable soft tissue analog for the most part. So let's kind of go over the results and do like a brief overview of the video today. So we grabbed Grandpappy's Savage 9.
Look at the vibration in this head. This is not an absolute distraction of the head. This is a low level of energy. This is a head that is shaking in the same way Charlie Kirk had a little shake, a little physical reaction to the bullet incoming. But it's a bullet from an elevated point where the neck isn't blown up. So there is something in the conditions that all these videos use, which is always straight shot, always close, always right onto a target or hitting a bone. But there's a way this bullet can hit you and you don't have a complete destruction like your jello. Now, boom, we see in this case, the bullet passed through. But it tells us that it's not the whole story, these exploding heads, already to begin. Now let's do a little bit of ballistics. When a bullet exits, it's rolling. There is a rotation. The rotation is induced by the rifling of the gun. The rotation is important to keep the stability of the bullet. That's how bullets are designed to fly through and to keep their direction. There is a concept called the angle of attack, and there are concepts called yaw and pitch, which will determine to what extent is the bullet flying straight like this or inclinated. Let's say that this is the tip of the bullet, inclinated like this. And the bullets, snipers know this, are also slightly curved rightward. That is because they are rotating rightward, and eventually the effect of the wind accumulates slightly toward the right, influencing therefore, and that accumulates over distance, and it varies. At first, when it comes out of the gun, it can be very high, the variation in pitch and yaw. Eventually, it stabilizes at its most stable point, but it keeps oscillating, and there are circular, what they call conic convergence. There's a circular effect where there's a rhythmical change of the yaw and a rhythmical change of the pitch. So it kind of forms a flower like this. but it kind of revolves always around the center. That is simply slightly varying down and right as the bullet is produced to do this. Now, when a bullet enters skin, and this is a set of mathematical models that are used to predict the damage of bullet and their internal trajectory, you can see that there's a section of the progression that is a straight entry. And then, as we track the various paths of various bullets, we have the opening of an internal cavity, which is the total space that will be basically messed up by the inflating tissue caused by the energy of the bullet. And then after, and don't pay attention to the details like 8 centimeters here, because this is a mathematical model. Depends on the bullet angle, depends on the bullet size, on the power, etc. But in this particular case of this mathematical model, after 8 centimeters, there is a phase called tumbling. And during that phase, the angle of the bullet will change. And look at this. The angle can be such that it's totally 90 degrees. So at first, the bullet is straight. Then it starts tumbling. Brackier says, where's my math bag, baby? Okay, what? I owe you a math bag? Okay, it's not time right now. Right now I'm doing ballistics, but I will show you some math when I get a chance. I'll show you some zeta function math since you give such a generous super chat. Thank you so much for your donation. So the bullet enters its tumbling phase. Now what this article is important for, and the article is called Rifle Bullet Penetration into Ballistic Gelatin. What this article is important for is that they have studied variations, slight variations of the angle of attack, which is very important here because elevation influences the angle of attack. Slight variations of the angle of attack will change the tumbling such that the tumbling is higher earlier. So here they have a point at 0.7 milliseconds. So just after the entry of the bullet, the tumbling becomes earlier when there is a higher angle of attack. And this is known. I've been asking AI, 6 degrees of freedom ballistics model. Does the shooting angle affect yaw? AI, pre-search AI responds, yes, the shooting angle can affect yaw in 6DOF ballistics as it influences the projectile's trajectory and stability. Here you have the phenomenon that I was talking about. The degrees of the projectile pitch and yaw. As it progresses through space, you have to imagine that the screen in front of us is the Z dimension. But it basically, if you were to face a bullet as the camera, you would see the bullet do kind of this, then do a little flower, and then center around that flower. That is how a bullet wobbles, and this wobble is exaggerated and increased by elevation. This effect of elevation is dependent in mathematical models of ballistic on DT, the yaw of repose. DT is the distance traveled. It is the difference in traveling of the bullet. That's why they called it T. The more you change T, the more you advance through the path of the bullet. And we have speculations that it was, I believe I've heard speculations from 80 yards to 120 yards at some point. And I believe that the site of shooting was something like 100 yards or more or less. Okay. But anyways, it's a lot of traveling. The more the bullet travels, the more it is subject to the effect of the change of angle of attack by the elevation of the initial shot. You have discussions of mathematical models of exactly this. Here I'm quoting a sniper hides a thread where they discuss new mathematical modeling, and they show you ultimately that the angle of the initial shooting is a variable that has to be included in the calculation because it can majorly influence yaw as the bullet progress, especially if it has a lot of time to progress. Now, I want to talk about recovered bullet because we have the beginning here with scientific models, mathematical models. We have the beginning of a story of ballistics that makes sense, which is, yes, the 30-06 can pass through ballistic gel straight shot. It can explode ballistic gel if it enters in collision with something like bone. But let's talk about skin. Is it possible that the skin on the other side of someone, or an animal or a human, is it possible that the skin retains the bullet in the body? Stories from hunters. Here we have a hunter on 24-hour campfire. I was up about 20 feet shot between the shoulders, severing the spine and angling down, destroying stuff inside. Recovered on offside ham. Note to JB, I did not use rear ham. This was a 30-06, 220 grain. So by the way, there are various grains, so you could have a much less powerful bullet that's called 30-06, but that doesn't have 220 grain. But this one had 220 grain. It recovers the bullet in an animal in the back leg. Another hunter story from 2023. I've recovered two complete 165 Corlocks 30-06, both on very steep angles. Neither deer took a step. I've also recovered pieces of a 165 Interlock that disintegrated on a high shoulder. A couple of 250 shockwaves out of a ML just under the backside hide. So note this here. Just under the backside hide. Isn't that fascinating that we have a hunter here who has realized the skin on the other side is the tough thing to pierce? I mean, these hunters are reporting it blew through a whole shoulder. Sometimes it blew through a whole bone. But the skin on the other side, the exit of the bullet, is what's hard to pierce for the bullet. Another hunter story from 2006. Second shot was fired into the animal's left-hand side and went through the upper leg bone, smashed the heart, and came to rest just under the skin. Another hunter with a 30-06, and when he finds the bullet is behind the skin of the other side. Another hunter story. Just recovered this morning from an 8-point buck. He was shot a little bit back and it angled through to the far side, coming to the rest in the rear flank under the hide. 30-06 again. Another 30-06 that gets stuck under the skin of the other side. Sarah Smith says, JF, you should at the very least understand that bullets fall because of gravity and not because they are designed to fall. I know. You misunderstood me. I'm saying that the yaw that the bullet adopts in flight is designed to track the effect of gravity so that it follows the average trajectory of gravity. You can ask Grok about it. You'll see that I'm absolutely right. From a 100-yard frontal shot, found the bullet near the hip just under the backstrap. So again, the animal tissues retaining the 30-06. And what is the thing that almost systematically retains the bullet? It's the skin on the other side. Now, if you have a tumbling bullet, you're going to have a certain proportion of the angled bullet that arrive like this on the skin of the other side, or like this. Some, by random, will happen to have not tumbled hard enough to be piercing through, and then you're going to get an exit wound. Here's a scientific look, mathematical look at yaw as the distance progresses for a shot. You can see two phenomena here. First, these circles are representation. The bigger the circle, the more yaw variation there is. So this literally represents the projectile direction in space. So if you have a wider circle, it's because the wobbling is broader. If you have little circle, then the wobbling is smaller. What you have is, at the exit of the gun, you have yaw and pitch relatively stable up until 50 meters, increase in yaw and pitch, and you start having a cone expansion. So you have more wobble after 50 meters. Now, you attain maximal wobble at maybe 200 meters, which is this maximal wobble, and then it kind of restabilizes down into large wobble, but smaller than what it had at the maximum. So it's entirely possible that if you add elevation to it, it's an aggravating factor, but even in a straight shot, projectile orientation with no wind, straight shot, you already have a wobble starting around 50 meters, and you definitely are into a wobble at 100 meters. Now, let's look at another hunter story. The buck was shot with a 30-06, 150-grain bullet at maybe 50 yards. The bullet entered right behind the left shoulder into the rib cage and through both lungs and heart and out into the right shoulder. No exit wound. The bullet stopped right underneath the hide of the left shoulder. Have I shown you enough examples that show that it is a statistically probable finding that when a bullet has stayed in an animal, it has bumped mostly because of the skin of the other side? Very rarely people find the bullet, at least for these powerful bullets. For a weaker bullet, they would. But for a powerful bullet, people find that the limiting factor is the exit of the skin of the other side of the shooting. Let's look at some of the damage, because you have these exploding ads on Twitter, on these videos, on YouTube videos. And let's look at some realistic shootings with a 30-06. And you'll see that the animals aren't exploding. Here's a successful hunt of some kind of an antelope.
Top. Beautiful bull. But, I mean, as tough as nails. I mean, we started on the top there. We are now right in the bottom of the valley where the baboons sleep. look at the orange legs and the...
So here, look at the damage here. It's a V opening of the sort that... Okay, it may have grazed the animal here or barely touched the belly of the animal, but it's a V shape that is of the equivalent damage that I would expect on Charlie Kirk's neck. This is not an exploded antelope. This is a 30-06 injury. Let's look at another 30-06 injury, more clear on this video. So this guy just hunted this deer.
There she is.
Look at the 30-06 injury. I mean, this is not an exploded neck. This is not an exploded spine. Maybe internally there's lots of damage, but this is a 30-06 injury, and it's bleeding less than in Charlie Kirk's case. So it's entirely possible for a 30-06 to make just minimal damage and to not explode the animal that you're shooting. Okay, so I lowered the sound just in case that would be copyright music. Here, that's another 30-06 injury. Now, we don't get to see it close, but in general, we don't see an exploding deer. We see a piercing of a deer. And on top of all of these stories that we've seen from the hunters, we must conclude that it is possible for a bullet to wobble internally such that it cannot pierce the skin on the other side. It's not that the bullet has lost much power. It still has a lot of energy, but it's arriving at the wrong angle such that its piercing face is useless to it. And there's much more absorption of the energy when the bullet enters like this rather than like this. So instead of splitting the skin open to create the exit wound and get out, it bounces on the skin. The skin throws it back inside. That is why there are so many hunters that find bullet fragments or whole bullets behind the next sheet of skin that the bullet had to encounter. Rodita Sid says, Jeff, in your White People cookbook, do you have some venison or hunting game? I will certainly include this. I haven't yet, but I'm getting there. Brack here sends $10. Thank you so much. He says, keep in mind, the physiology of these animals may be vastly or subtly different than that of a human. Even differences in connective tissues could cause their bodies to react differently to trauma. Hello? Is my mic lower? Oh. Well, that's bizarre because I didn't lower my mic sound. Hello? Yeah. Okay. Just trying to give you guys the best sound. Hello? Okay, I guess we're gonna have to go with this. Hopefully it's not too low, and I will try to yell in the mic. So, yes, I acknowledge that skin is different between humans and animals, but the same principles can be at play. And I will note that in a lot of these hunting stories, they were straight shots. They were straight shots. Add to this the fact that it was an elevated shot, and that an elevated shot increases the wobbling, increases the yaw effect of distance. This bullet must have accumulated quite the amount of yaw and angle of attack before it got to the first layer of skin of Charlie. As it entered the first layer of skin of Charlie, this angle of attack induced a wobble, because when the tip of the bullet enters the skin, but it's entering at an angle, what happens when you enter something at an angle? Well, try with a car. If you're on ice with a car, you try to give a little shot to the right, what happens? Your car starts veering, losing control from the back, tumbling toward the left. The same thing happens to a bullet. As it enters, it hits differently, just like a plane is aerodynamically more pushing below the wing than it is above the wing. An angled bullet is suffering from a difference of friction. The upper side is receiving more push than the lower side. What do we have as a result? Tumbling of the bullet. As it gets into the back of Charlie's neck, It can only expand Charlie's neck, but not pierce it. And it pushes the neck, pushes the neck skin, pushes. And then the neck skin says, no, no, I'm bringing you back through elasticity. Pew! Pushing back the bullet toward the spinal cord of Charlie Kirk. And now for the piece of resistance. I will claim that the story I just told is visible on the video. Get ready, ladies and gentlemen. Of course, trigger warning, we are about to see the physics and the ballistics of the moment of the shooting of Charlie Kirk. We are doing so for the purpose of examination, for the purpose of understanding the physics, and for the purpose of the truth. So if you are sensitive to these things, by all means leave. But it is important to look at those facts and to understand them. And Jan, tell me, listen to all the arguments I've done tonight and come tell me tomorrow morning that you don't see it. It's happening. The neck of Charlie Kirk is getting stretched by a wobbling bullet. I have it right here. So I'm going to play, and then we're going to try to go frame by frame and isolate the moment I'm talking about. So here, you will see that there is a V-shaped bouncing of the skin of Charlie Kirk. You will see that the bullet enters his neck, creates a V-shaped convex springing bubble of skin that truly extends relatively far. And you will see that the bullet then doesn't pierce the skin, that the skin eventually returns through elasticity in its normal position. And this is beyond the regular body wave. People are saying, does this violate the TOS? I don't think that it violates the TOS to show a public event of that kind. Let me ask Grok. Does it violate YouTube TOS to show the Charlie Kirk assassination video for the purpose of analysis? Let's see what Grok has to say, but I think I've seen this video. I've seen this video on YouTube. Yeah, for research purposes, there's an exception in the TOS. We are truly doing ballistics research here. It depends on the specific content of the video and how it's presented, but showing graphic footage of the Charlie Kirk assassination from September 11, even for analysis, carries a high risk of violating YouTube's community guideline on violent or graphic content. Well, how do I guess... I guess I will have to cancel the show tonight. I mean, what I will do is I will continue recording offline, and then I will publish my full analysis on Twitter. Damn it, YouTube. So I will publish my full analysis on Twitter, but what I will tell you is that At 9 seconds in this video, I believe that we are seeing a V-shaped expansion of the bullet bouncing on the back skin of Charlie Kirk. And the link is shared. Everyone can advance through the video. But to reiterate, and here I'm not showing the shooting, but to reiterate, in this area right here, you can see a V-shaped expansion, not in the picture I'm showing right now, but if you were to play it up to 9 seconds. I believe that the bullet came from Tyler Robinson, was a 30-06, pierced the neck of Charlie in a way that is expectable from a 30-06 with some degree of freedom left to the fact that there was elevation, there might have been increased wobble, therefore increased angle of attack, less straight entry, more internal tumbling, gets into the back of the skin of Charlie Kirk. We see it on the video. And then the back of the skin of Charlie Kirk pushes it back in the body of Charlie Kirk. I believe, therefore, that the mainstream narrative is correct. And I challenge Ian Carroll to look at this video and conclude something different, or at least integrate this knowledge to your evaluation, Ian, of the possibilities that this happened in the way it is claimed and believed to be. So I will cut this show for tonight, and I'll see you all on an uploaded version on X with further comments. Much love, everyone, and I will see you all tomorrow. I'll be on a break of the regular show. I'll be on the Courrier du Coeur, and then I'll come back probably Wednesday. Much love and sleep well, and see you on X.